This is a CBC podcast.
Support for delivery of this podcast comes from Chevrolet. At Chevrolet, we bring people together with the things that matter to them most. Visit chevrolet.gm.ca.
Hello and welcome to Ontario This Week. This is a weekly podcast that rewinds back to the best and brightest of Ottawa Morning, Ontario Today, and All in a Day. I'm your podcaster, Michael Bardwaj. And yes, I'm back. It's great to be in front of the microphone again after a couple of months deep in the South African jungles. Coming up, we'll hear about life after the accident of a former rising hockey star in Ottawa. Headbands, studs, and leather jackets are all the required gear to listen to Glass Tiger. Well, now you may want to opt for your comfy couch while listening to their new sound. And finally, International Mole Day. That's all on Ontario This Week.
A hockey player from the University of Moncton is now in stable condition.
The report was chilling for athletes and parents. Images of Sebastian Savage lying face down on the ice still circulate on the internet. 2 years ago, the University of Moncton winger went into the boards during a hockey game against the Acadia Axemen. At age 24, he became a paraplegic. It was the end of his hockey career and the beginning of a sometimes painful journey. CBC reporter Hallie Cottenham spent some time with Sebastian Savage to find out how he's doing both physically and emotionally 2 years later.
Oh, yeah. My whole upper body is pretty much burning right now.
Sebastian Savage shakes with effort as he strains to lift weights with his arms. His physiotherapist, Jeff Spiro, helps him finish when the weight seems too much.
But now we're getting into some of the weaker muscles for Sebastian. So where before he could probably have chest pressed his own body weight, now we're down to 5 kilograms, which has improved since he started here, but it's still one of the tougher exercises because it uses some of the muscles that have been weakened from the injury.
The injury was to Sebastian's spinal cord. It happened 2 years ago. He was playing hockey for the University of Moncton in a game against Acadia.
For some reason, he just fell off balance and he fell kind of in front of me, and I tripped over his legs, and you know, by the time I raised my head up, I was right in the boards. I knew immediately that, you know, my spinal cord, something had happened. I just remember opening my eyes and, you know, I just felt everything just stopped. And, you know, in my mind, I'm like sort of telling myself, okay, that's it. I'm not playing hockey anymore.
Sebastian fractured the C5 and C6 vertebrae in his neck. The injury left him in an electric wheelchair, paralyzed from the chest down.
First couple of months after my accident, that's when I saw like the major improvements, things that just came back naturally. And, you know, that was the part that was really easy. But ever since, you know, that happened, there hasn't been many changes in my condition. And it's just a lot harder to gain, you know, muscle and strength back. Since I don't have full strength, it's, you know, it's painful, and it takes a while before you see an improvement. But whenever that day comes, it's, you know, it's fun.
Sebastian is 26 now. 3 times a week, he's at the gym trying to strengthen his arms and torso. He wants to get strong enough to lift himself in and out of bed. Right now, the attendant has to come over morning and night.
All right, we'll head through to the back.
It's the ones that decide that they want to improve, they want to get a little bit better, they want to see how far they can push their abilities, and those are the ones that make improvements after the spontaneous recovery is done.
Sebastian's father, Sylvain, sits in a chair at the side of the gym. He flips through a magazine, waiting for his son to finish.
We know that Sebastian won't ever walk again unless they find a miracle. And when you see people walking, and you say, well, he could be better, but he could be worse too.
Before the accident, Sylvain used to drive a truck for a living. Now, at age 50, he drives his son to doctor's appointments and to the gym. This is his life now, too.
Well, I'm the driver most of the time there. We come here like 3 times a week, plus all his appointments. That's what I do most of my time now. I'm not working right now.
Just a ramp that goes down. I'm able to roll into my van. My dad will lock me in.
Sebastian has his own apartment in an accessible high-rise in Ottawa. His pet cats, Diesel and Lizzie, pad over to his wheelchair to greet him.
I see they get up to a lot of mischief.
Yes, they do. Especially this little guy. Very spacious, it's big, and there's a lot of room for me to move around.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have the big TV in here, so if there's a hockey game on or something,
You'll catch it?
Yes. And I just have some exercise machine in my room. That's a hand bike for my arms, and that's my manual wheelchair.
Sebastian is still a big hockey fan. He says not playing leaves him more time to watch the games. He's even part of a hockey pool this year, although he ran into trouble picking his players.
It didn't go too well because I was doing the hockey pool in bed because it was late at night and, you know, I have somebody transferring me into bed at night and I didn't want them to, you know, come transfer me at 11:30 at night. And my laptop kind of went offline a couple of times. So there's 5 picks on my team that I didn't, and that the computer picked up for me. They're Toronto players, so I'm stuck with a couple of Toronto players. So I'm not too happy about that, but you never know.
But sometimes watching hockey on his big screen TV is too real, and he's back on that rink in Moncton.
Whenever I see players along the boards and stuff like that, I'm just like, I don't know, I get this weird feeling that, because I see players, you know, going full blast, full speed in the other zone for a touch icing or something like that, a dangerous play, and I'm like, oh my God, if you only knew the danger or the possibility of you falling and stuff like that.
On a bookshelf, there are pictures of Sebastian with his family and in his hockey uniform. There are also pictures of him with his girlfriend, Heather, at weddings and parties, both before and after the accident.
You know, she's been there, you know, ever since I woke up in the hospital in Moncton after my accident. You know, at first I wasn't sure if I wanted us to stay together or not. But I needed her so much, and, you know, she was there. She came to see me every single day in the hospital, and I was there for a whole year. So it kind of brought us closer to together. It changed me a lot, you know, going from before my accident to now. I mean, as a person, I tend not to fuss the small stuff, and I don't stress out the little things, and I try to communicate more, and might be a little bit more sensitive. All things that were lacking, I guess, before my accident. You know, it's different now. Some people are uncomfortable, you know, because they don't know. They kind of see me differently now, so that's kind of weird, you know, and I'm kind of afraid to, you know, be the first one to talk about it because I don't know how comfortable they are with my situation, but my close friends and all that, that hasn't changed, so.
But there are daily frustrations, stores and restaurants and washrooms that aren't accessible to his wheelchair, having to plan every outing in advance. Sebastian has been waiting a year to get his van adapted so he can drive it himself. He gets repeated bladder infections and can't feel the early symptoms. And then there are the dreams.
I guess the most frustrating part would be going to bed at night and, you know, dreaming. Whenever I'm dreaming, I'm not in a wheelchair. So just waking up in the morning, sometimes that can be frustrating, you know, waking up and you're like, oh, yeah, forgot about that. That's probably the hardest.
There are good days, going to the movies with his girlfriend, achieving some new range of movement at physio. He's taking psychology courses online through Athabasca University with hopes of someday getting a degree. And in November, he'll see his first live NHL hockey game since the accident. Sebastian and some buddies are going to see Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins play the Ottawa Senators. For CBC Radio, I'm Hallie Cottenham in Ottawa.
We'll be hearing more from Hallie in just a bit. If you have any thoughts or comments on that story, please email me at ontariothisweek@cbc.ca. The hair was big, and the spandex was tight, and the glam was gleaming. Yes, rock bands like Glass Tiger ruled our tape decks for much of the 80s, and although the band still performs, its members have found new projects to take up, including writing self-help books. Alan Frew is the lead singer of Glass Tiger. He is also the author of The Action Sandwich, a six-step recipe to success. He spoke to Rita Celli on Ontario Today.
What is Glass Tiger up to these days?
We're still alive and well and touring. We don't tour as much as we could simply because I'm too busy doing other things and I kind of frustrate the other guys, you know, because calls will come in. Do you want to go do this gig? No. We do that one? No. We do this one? No. But funny enough, we've got three coming up. We're doing Calgary, Edmonton, and Surrey, BC. And then we're doing New Year's Eve, so that's enough for me. But we're still alive and well and doing, you know, doing a lot of festivals.
Alan Frew is here with me in the studio. He's also the author of a new book, The Action Sandwich, and we're going to talk about this. I'd also like to let you know that you can call us here. Maybe you have a question. Maybe you saw Glass Tiger in concert. Maybe you still go. Alan is happy to take your calls at 1-888-817-8995, and maybe through some of your storytelling, it will provoke some questions of you. 1-888-817-8995. Tell me about why you wanted to do this. This is getting into the realm of being a motivational guy. Right.
Well, I mean, I've been, I take my life very seriously, the idea of living it very seriously. I'm not flippant about it. I've studied through the years and read voraciously, and I was always attracted to that type of book, you know, Napoleon Hill and the Tony Robbins thing in the 80s and Deepak Chopra and Dyer and Canfield. And it was just something that really attracted me because I always wanted to sort of challenge myself. And I've been very successful. My wife and I have been very successful as business people outside the realm of music. We've got a very successful food company and I've done all kinds of stuff. And most recently, I was at a seminar. I wanted to see Canfield speak, and it was one of the Power Within ones, and it was all based around The Secret. And it just blew my mind because, first of all, you know, I'm here to say there is no secret. It never was a secret. You know, now they've got The Secret of The Secret coming out.
I like this, by doing what you're already doing,
Well, see, exactly. Now, funny enough, I'm in Ottawa here, and we got our first scathing review from one of your newspapers, where one of your local writers sort of said, okay, smart guy, what if you're sitting on the couch, drinking beer, smoking joints, overweight, watching television, how can you be successful doing what you're already doing?
Not a bad question.
Right. But what I'm saying is, well, here's the deal. The book is based on receptivity, desire, belief, intention, and taking action. So I'm here to tell you that if you are receptive to sitting your fat ass on the couch, your desire is to drink beer and smoke joints, if your action is to turn the television on and not get up for a month, then congratulations, you are a success.
Okay, well, let's talk about this. Lessons from a tour bus, because you tell some great stories from your childhood, and I'd like, I'm going to walk you through some of them. So,
okay.
Well, stage fright. Talk about this. I mean, a lot of people might be interested in hearing.
Well, I still get it. I mean, you know, you and I are on live radio, and I'm just walking in off the street, and all of a sudden, boom, you're live. And I get nervous, and, you know, I'm not sure where we're going to go with this. So I still get it. I still get it at Glass Tiger shows. But in the early days, it was my nemesis. It put me to the point of wanting to throw up. And I tell a rather hilarious story. about that challenge of having to face. Do you want me to tell this?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I used to throw up, and so I started medicating myself legally at first. I went to my doctor, and no, actually illegally, I guess at first. You know, I'm not an advocate, and never.
I'm not going to cross-examine you on that.
And I tried that, and that wasn't working. So I went to my doctor and said, you know, I've got nerves. And he said, well, take one of these blue ones for your stomach and one of these pink ones for your nerves. And before we knew it, I was having a full-flown acid trip on stage and ran off within the first 30 seconds and hauled myself up and boarded the place up. And the poor band were left on their own without me. Alan is not coming back.
And there they are.
Right, and we got fired. And so eventually I did that to the point where it drove me insane. And so one night in a little place called Tomogamy, I gave myself permission. Here's the deal. If you're going to throw up, throw up.
Okay, you said that to yourself before you went on stage.
Yeah, if you're going to be sick, just be sick. And of course, what happened? I wasn't sick. Right?
Oh.
And so I talk about in the book, you know, you know, how do you overcome fear? You don't. You never overcome it. Successful people accept fear and do it anyway.
Yeah, and there's also a scene you gave about 30 years ago, Kingston, Ontario, 1977.
Yeah.
I can't help but wonder, was somebody in the audience at one of these events where, you know, where you disappeared?
Yeah, I wonder, I don't know, maybe if anybody does call in, they could tell us if they ever saw, it was a band called Onyx, O-N-Y-X, and our slogan was Onyx, a type of rock.
Deeply clever.
Alan Frew is the lead singer of Glass Tiger. He was speaking to Rita Celli on Ontario Today. So I used to be a big science geek back in my high school days. I mean, who wasn't, you know? I was counting pi to as many digits as possible, imagining the inner workings of mitochondrial DNA. And sometimes I'd cast my mind to all things mole. Well, that's exactly what CBC reporter Hallie Cottenham did this past week. She was up in Arnprior at the local high school there, celebrating International Mole Day. And she joined Kathleen Petty on Ottawa Morning to tell her all about it.
Tucker, it's Hallie from CBC.
Roger.
What's the situation? What's the sit rep out there?
We're empty at the front hall. We're scoping out the mass, and we're heading up to the geography hall right now.
Any sign of any teachers?
No, we haven't scoped any teachers out yet.
Okay, thanks. 10-4.
Watch that.
10-4, roger that. Okay, roger what? Joining me now with an explanation is Hallie, no longer on the walkie-talkie, but right here in the flesh. Hi.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Moles, Hallie?
Yes and no, Kathleen. Yesterday was International Mole Day. How did you celebrate, Kathleen?
Well, I would have to actually know what Mole Day is to know how to celebrate, so why don't you help me out here?
Well, Mole Day is a day set aside by chemists and science buffs to honor Amadeo Avogadro, who died way back in 1858. He came up with this basic measuring unit in chemistry, and this day is celebrated on October 23rd, starting at 6:02 in the morning, and that's very specific because the dates and the time correlate with the formula that he came up with.
Okay. Still scratching my head. So what is a mole and why was yesterday set aside to mark it?
Well, excellent questions, Kathleen. I set out to Arnprior District High School in the wee hours of the morning. Teachers gathered there shortly after 5 o'clock yesterday morning. They borrowed the cafeteria kitchen to make pancakes for 140 high school kids who showed up at 6 o'clock, Kathleen. They played science-themed music on the ghetto blaster in the cafeteria. And the teachers hid more than 6,000 moles for students to find. Now, not real moles, Kathleen, not the rodent, nor chemical equations on pieces of paper, but a bit of a hybrid. I brought in a little one to show you. They're tiny inch square papers with a sketch of a rodent on them that the students set out to find. The first voice you'll hear, however, is Karen Dodds, who's head of the science department at ADHS.
Now, you know that a dozen represents 12 eggs, a pair represents 2. Well, 6.02 times 10 to the 23rd, Avogadro's number, represents a chemistry unit. It's how we measure atoms and molecules.
Mole's just a unit of measurement.
So, for example, oxygen?
15.99.
Are you here for International Mole Day?
Yes, ma'am.
Why are you here?
Pancakes.
You're here for the pancakes?
Oh, yeah.
So tell me, what is International Mole Day?
Tell you the truth, I don't really know. I wasn't going to come in, but my brother said his team wasn't going to show up, so he dragged me in.
It's time for an update.
Never look at the first batch. First batch is
done. Mole is the amount of substance. It has to do with chemistry, and it's measured by Avogadro's number.
Which is?
6.02 times 10 to the power of 23.
How do you know that, Jillian?
Because I'm in chemistry right now, grade 11 chemistry.
So what's happening today?
What we're basically doing is we're having a mole scavenger hunt, and we're having breakfast right now, 6:02 in the morning. It's the 10th month, the 23rd day.
A scavenger hunt for moles. I'm picturing rodents with whiskers. I'm not picturing the right thing, am I?
No, it's little pictures of moles. They're not actually, no rodents are harmed during mole day, so it's good. Molar
reflections. Let's see the shirt.
It says Mole Man, and it has all our equations on it, 6.02 times 10 to the 23rd. Returning champ from last year,
oh,
ready
no
to
kidding.
Kick butt. I've got some coffee to bribe the teachers, some walkie-talkies. Chemical
reactions. I didn't come last year. I slept in.
Why'd you come this year?
That is a very good question.
There's so many other things going on. It's kind of neat to see students sort of this upbeat about science. We sneak in the actual learning underneath.
There's a lot of kids here. It's pretty early in the morning. Why do you think kids come out?
Well, I know one perk for us was that our teacher said we got 5 marks on our extra test, on our next test. That was for our chemistry and biology in grade 12, university course, so, yeah.
The walkie-talkies are for communication because we have to scope out where the teachers are going to be. Each teacher is given an envelope full of moles, so... So these walkie-talkies help us communicate and isolate the teachers so that we can hunt them down and get their moles.
Well, who's on the other end of that walkie-talkie?
Whiskey Echo Sierra, are you there?
I gotta be kind of careful because students are rather vicious when moles are concerned. In fact, sometimes the only way to get, you know, past the group of them in the hallway is to take a bunch of them, throw them in the air, and just run
for your life.
Yeah, I've done that a few times over the years. So what I'm doing right now is I'm just sort of quietly hiding a bunch of moles around the school and checking to make sure I'm not being followed.
Just there? You're just leaving it in the plain view?
I gotta give some easy ones.
When the students approach you, what do they say?
Well, first they say, Madame, do you have any moles? And I says, until you know how to say mole in French, you don't get any. Ah. So that's my strategy for them getting moles on mole day.
What is a mole en français?
Should I tell you? No children are listening. La taupe. And that's what they have to look up the word. And until they find the word and come and ask me in French, that's when I'm very happy to share with them.
All right, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Salut.
Okay, let's go, Wes, let's go. Wes, if you intercept any of our team, bring them down to that science hall ASAP. Hey, Wes, I gotta scope out the other hotspots.
Oh, can I see them? Where'd you find them?
Mr. Cudmore was just dropping them as he was walking.
Did he know that he was dropping them?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Tucker, do you read, Tucker? They're not here yet, but we have a mole. I don't read.
He's got a mole.
En français.
Okay,
how's y'all have a dictionary?
So how are things going?
Not so well.
What's the problem?
I can't find any moles.
Apparently, if you know how to say it in French, the French teacher will give you one.
Yeah, well, I need to work on my French, so...
Oui, j'ai des enveloppes pleines de belles choses. Oh, c'est beau.
Hey, si vous me voyez encore ce matin,
oui, oui.
Tu peux les me donner si tu veux.
Je pourrais te donner, mais est-ce que tu sais comment on dit mole en français?
Oui, je vais le trouver, madame.
Tu vas le trouver pour moi. Merci, merci beaucoup.
Wes, we need that dictionary ASAP.
Go ahead.
Mole? No, no, we've got a negative, negative.
Absolument pas.
Oui, ma belle.
Oui, ma belle.
Oui, je vais.
Non.
Un taux, un taux, un taux, un
taux. Oui, tu peux avoir.
Un taux, un taux. Oh, no, no, no. I forgot from last year.
What is the word?
Taupe. It's like hedgehog.
Alors, merci beaucoup. Salut. Taupe, 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 taupe.
We are going to do the mole pledge. I want everybody to stand up. I pledge allegiance to the mole and to the science from which it comes, one SI unit, extremely divisible with micromoles and millimoles for all. Happy Mole Day, everyone.
Happy Mole Day.
Hallie Cottenham is a field reporter. She was speaking to Kathleen Petty on Ottawa Morning. Hope you enjoyed my debut return podcast. I've enjoyed talking to you, as always. Once again, Ontario This Week at cbc.ca, if you have any ideas or comments or feedback. And for all those other little lovely podcasts that you're so desperately hoping for, cbc.ca/podcasting. That's where you can download them. I'll be right back here in the seat next week. Until then.
Hi, I'm Jesse Brown. I'm the host of Search Engine, a new CBC radio show that is all about how the internet is changing politics and culture. It's not a gadget show. We don't really care much about technology so much as we care about the effect that technology is having on the world that we live in. All of the surprising and significant and funny stories that we bring you on Search Engine are about things that are happening right now. In the short time that we've been on the air, we've already become the CBC's most popular news podcast in the States. So come find out why. Subscribe to our podcast on CBC's podcasting page or through iTunes.